Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking about, it's an interesting one because recently the 18 to 35-year-olds, what we would primarily refer to as the youths of South Africa, have now been given, that ability to go and get registered for vaccination and actually go get their jabs. And in all of this, we saw a lot of excitement over the last week or so. People talking about getting their jabs, young people posting on social media. But the folks over at Mimecast are actually saying that things like that could actually pose a cybersecurity risk. You posting your vaccination card, all of that, a lot of personal information that could actually be used against you, especially when you place it online. So that's the discussion we are going to be having just around cybersecurity, because it is an interesting issue at the moment, and one of those things that's been on the rise, cybersecurity threats over the last couple of months. I think the case of Transnet over the last couple of weeks has really put this issue into the spotlight. So to help us to unpack all of these issues, we are joined by Dwayne Nicol, who is a cybersecurity expert over at Mimecast. Dwayne, greetings to you today.
Hey, morning, Gidiwa. How's it going?
Now, doing all right on this end. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being with us. I think, a good place for us to start is always getting a sense of the organization. I think for many people that, are sitting in corporates out there, they may or may not have received, I think many by now have received an email that has gone through the Mimecast system at one point or another. I know that we have, our emails run through Mimecast, so we know what it's about. But for those who may not know, as a company, Mimecast, what are we talking about? And you specifically, what's your role at the company?
Excellent. So, Mimecast was founded in the early 2010s, 2013, by two South African guys, Peter Bauer and Neil Murray. Effectively, they wanted to kind of, further secure business email. So they headed out to the UK, where we pretty much headquartered now globally. We've got a big office there of about 500 people. We've got a similar office in Boston. But fundamentally, what Mimecast's initial kind of offer to the market was a massively scaled, kind of business offering to offer email archiving, email security, and business continuity during outages. In the almost two decades that it's been in existence now, I mean, we've completely innovated that company view to offer things like more internal protection mechanisms, and that's where I kind of form part of, which is our awareness training service. And then more recently, we've also started focusing on things outside of the traditional company perimeter, which are things like DMARC, things like Brand Exploit Protect, which really look at what's going on at a domain level, more around that traditional secure email gateway services that typically are offered by many service providers out there. So my role at Mimecast is I'm one of the product managers on awareness training. I focus predominantly on offering, an innovative solution to training end users at companies. And that's pretty much my mandate, to offer value to the market.
Dwayne, just before we get into, some of the cybersecurity issues, that we teased in the beginning, I'm just curious. And I'm pretty sure that I'm not alone in this curiosity, but email, and is specifically business email, how deep is this issue? Are people still sending that many emails? I only ask because, in this day and age, there are so many different, methods of communicating in business, WhatsApp groups, social media. I think that the rates of calling and internet calls has become, so much cheaper. Are we still sending that many emails out there?
We actually are. Like, all the data suggests that it's still the primary communication for business. And on top of that, it seems to be increasing over time and definitely not decreasing. With that comes obviously an additional set of challenges, right? As that scales up massively, and as many experts say that it's going to go down over time, and again, that data suggests that it's definitely not. what we're seeing is a lot of cyber criminals taking advantage of that trend and obviously using email as their primary factor or their primary vector for attacking businesses. So whether that be a sophisticated phishing attack, whether that be an impersonation, whether that be just a hard kind of old hacktivism, kind of item, it's definitely not something that's going to go away in the very near future, and probably something that will go, and last a very long time. I mean, Mimecast personally, we're processing across 40,000 customers, probably about billions of emails every single day. And if you look at our rejection statistics based on what's actually legitimate, I mean, it far outweighs legitimate email. And that just shows you the kind of state of what business email looks like, especially considering that at the gateway level, companies are rejecting even more than they are accepting into their environments.
Okay. I think that gives us a little bit, of background on that, because now it can help us to port over to this issue of vaccinations. The young people are there, posting on social media. I guess my question is, why are we concerned? Can't we just let the young people be great and just show the country that they're loud and proud to be, vaccinated out there?
It's such a tightrope to walk, So I absolutely agree. I think it's fantastic that, the government has allowed these 18 years old and plus to kind of register and get their vaccinations. And that's phenomenal. We've seen all the statistics, kind of support that the vaccinations are climbing exponentially day on day. And that's, again, it's wonderful. The problem is in as positive and excited as young people are, and I fall into that bracket, and I want to post on social media, I want to get my friends and I want to get my family behind this kind of notion that, mass vaccination does definitely help. The problem with that is that we sometimes lose the focus of what we are posting online. And what we're seeing more and more is people posting these vaccination cards online, which includes their ID numbers. Now, it may seem innocent to, the person posting at that time. But with, the effects of social engineering going absolutely crazy over the last kind of 12 to 18 months in the heat of this global pandemic, cyber criminals are now focusing on social media as an incredible attack vector, right? Because they're not having to source the information for an attack themselves. We are posting it online for them, which makes it very, very simple. So we've got this persona that's name is Bob, right? And Bob posts this vaccination card online. Now, typically, he thinks that, a friend and a family and maybe some close colleagues will be able to see this online. But the fact is just the opposite. Once you post something online, if someone I know comments on it and, that engagement starts tracing to way further than your reach can actually control and could land in the hands of a cyber criminal. Now, once a cyber criminal's got, an access to things like your ID number, your name, all those things, they typically start looking at a wider array of information, going into your LinkedIn, who's your colleagues. Then they start looking at second vaccination jabs, and they can kind of date range when that would be. What they might then do is, look at sending you an email, which is looking legitimate and looking like it's coming from your real healthcare practitioner, from your medical aide, from anyone that was involved in that initial kind of round of vaccination. That then maybe leads you to number one, and worst case scenario, a wrong area or wrong site for vaccination and do whatever that line of thinking goes. But more so than not, what they'll do is they'll get you to click on something to say that you accept this next vaccination date. Once you've clicked, typically what they're looking at doing is taking control of your laptop, taking control of your personal computer, or whatever it is that you've clicked on, and then downloading more information and then going off to your company that you represent. So that entire, kind of attack, I guess that sequence lasts, from minutes to, a couple of hours. And then from that very short instance, they can create a lot of havoc for internal IT and security teams at the company.
And when it comes to everything that you've just highlighted, because, in the beginning, when you said that, people shouldn't be posting. Not to say that people should be posting, but there is a danger in people getting information from the cards that people are posting. I was just thinking about, you know, maybe some identity theft of some sort and everything. But I think the trail that you've just described to us is quite scary, if I'm going to be honest, because you've sort of gone in, and I can just imagine the use cases, you know, how far it might actually go, because you've just given us just the health sort of trail. I can imagine someone trying to impersonate a bank official or something just based on some of the information they would be able to gather on you, and you know, based on your name, based on your ID and stuff like that. And there was something you mentioned at the beginning, and I think it's what you've described to us, but you said social engineering. Is that the process that you've just described to us? Because, you know, it's a technical term that might need us to unpack just a little bit.
Yeah, so good question. And at a high level, yes. And I want to be clear, right? That's the extreme cases. You know, not everyone. Yeah, I guess we can't live in fear that we're a target of these, you know, complete criminal syndicates that are looking for our data. But that's how we've unfortunately got to live online. You know, I keep referencing this one great quote by Emma Sadler that said, "Never put anything online that you wouldn't want next to a highway on a billboard." And it rings so true today. I mean, would you put your vaccination card, you know, next to the N1, you know, on a busy highway morning? I would hope not, right? And the reality is that most users will never face that deep and dark, you know, social attack that I've just mentioned. And that's a good thing. The problem is that it's becoming way more prevalent. So social engineering is essentially using the information we post online, and whether it be on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, these things can take a matter of seconds and be automated, right? I mean, I've sat in fantastic, you know, hacking, you know, kind of, what do you call them? Like trade shows, where a guy takes over a person visiting's phone and then, you know, emails his wife saying he's going to be late for work and that his colleague is picking up the kids. And then his wife replies and says, "Perfect, I'll see you at dinner." You know, the reality is that is probably the scariest thing that that person could ever imagine. But that's the reality that unfortunately we've got to be prepared for. So, I mean, look at social engineering at a high level, you know, taking the technicality out of it. If you post something online that's got some sensitive information, it's not that single post that gets, you know, that gets the attention of a hacker. It's primarily if Dwayne is the attack person that I want to go after, they're going to look at everything I've posted across multiple years, and not just on a single social, like accepted social media platform. They look at everything. They look at all the information they can find online in order to build an attack. Now, the attack crossroad comes at a point where it's okay, I've got enough on Dwayne, and I can personally get something out of him. Like, you know, you need to pay a co-payment of 150 Rand to go for your second jab or whatever it may be. The second thing is that, you know, I represent a global business. So on the other hand, it's like, well, hello, I might use this information to impersonate something else, a vendor that Dwayne commonly talks to, show up as that person and legitimately try and get him to click on a link or download an attachment or do something, make a payment, etc. And those are where the things get very dangerous. And that's typically where we're seeing the market move towards, because the payoff is just that much greater.
Now, in a typical sense, I know that people would be wondering why, as Mimecast, you're concerned about what's happening on social media. But I'm also guessing, because we've had cybersecurity discussions before, and just trailing from some of those, I would imagine that the reason why, as Mimecast, you're concerned about, you know, some of these issues is because, to my understanding at least, email fraud and the type of impersonation that you're talking about is one of the most common ways that, you know, consumers and businesses are being targeted, or actually being attacked or phished out there.
Yeah. So it's a state of awareness. That's the problem, right? And I mean, over the last couple of weeks since we launched the, you know, social engineering campaign, you know, what I've done is just very basically looked at the like hashtag vaccinated on Instagram. And that just gives you a plethora of open vaccination cards with no kind of masking of the ID numbers. That's from friends. It's from family. It's colleagues. It's, you know, social, very popular pop stars I've actually seen do it. And, you know, those are dangerous just behaviors in general. So what the way we look at it is that it's not going to get better until, you know, at a very low level, the corporates need to be, you know, so frequently trained on the dangers of access to internet assets like, you know, laptops, et cetera, iPads, whatever it is, and the safe usage of those assets. So if we think of it that way, think of it now on a more personal level. We're trying to actually educate the entire, you know, it sounds like a big task, but the entire South Africa to be a little bit more cyber aware, and not just cyber aware, security aware. That those split second decisions at those, you know, critical moments is where you've got to make the right decision in favor of doing the safer action as opposed to, you know, unlocking something like that's potentially dangerous to a cyber criminal. So the way we look at awareness training and generally speaking, all the data suggests that any form of awareness training helps change that behavior. And when we recently ran a study, we saw it was, you know, upwards of 5 times less likely to click on a dangerous link. So, you know, it's proven that a security awareness program gives you those outcomes, which are less dangerous clicks, which is a very basic way to look at it. But realistically, it's the only way that we can say that training equals better behavior. So rolling that out to, you know, the entire nation, or getting people on board with, you know, just second guessing those things they put online, second guessing that Facebook post or second guessing that tweet, is generally going to help the behavior be far more, I guess, hesitant across the nation, which again makes it harder for the criminals, and again should lower our exposure to a cyber attack.
I definitely agree with you on the point that, you know, training does lead to better behavior, because there is a certain awareness that comes in. But I want to touch on something that happened earlier this year to make a point that I'm interested to get your thoughts on. And that's the general, I'm going to call it one, information overload, but secondly, information overload that leads to apathy. Because I'm remembering that earlier this year, for example, because people usually take data privacy and cybersecurity together. And earlier this year, there was that issue around WhatsApp and the changes to its privacy policy. And, you know, everyone was up in arms and they said, we're going to leave WhatsApp. We're going to go to Telegram. We're going to go to Signal. We're all leaving. We're running away and we're never coming back to WhatsApp. But, you know, 6, 7, 8 months later, everyone is still on WhatsApp, right? So I guess the question I'm asking is, you know, maybe if there's any information that can help us to at least estimate how big this issue is in South Africa, or maybe what it's costing corporates or the economy, that could help us to maybe abate some of the apathy. Because I think by now, you know, if you're in a corporate, you've received copious amounts of, you know, reading on, you know, cybersecurity, the trainings, etc. But after some time, you know, people are people and they get over it.
So I love the way you paint that picture. Yeah, everyone hated WhatsApp 18 months ago, and then everyone was going to leave. But yeah, you know, the data suggests this the opposite, right? I think the user base has increased. So I've got the opinion that no one cares about privacy policy until they're met with a privacy policy. Okay, and what I mean by that is, any terms of service, anything we use today, our iPhones, our social media platforms, has a term of service. Has anyone ever read those terms of service? I would argue no. But companies are compelled to provide those privacy policies to the end users should something go wrong. It's a liability cap and it's a measurement of safety nets for both the user and the company. Okay. So when they change that privacy policy and whatever it was in the policy, because again, I most certainly didn't read it. People get this fear that oh my goodness, all the information I'm sharing is instantly accessible. But it's accessible in terms of delivering the service you are subscribed to. It's the same as using your iPhone. You've got to agree to the terms, otherwise you can't use the iPhone. It becomes a very niche paperweight. So in that sense, I think people take the general view of privacy, you know, very seriously, and people should, okay. But we're taking the wrong side of privacy, you know, very seriously. We're worrying about a massive corporate with incredible security measures in place, all messages encrypted, all those things. We're taking that lens on that and saying, how can we be using my data? But on the flip side of that, we are literally posting sensitive information online and then trying to hold the company responsible if something goes wrong. So it's again that very tight line that we need to walk across. It's not the company's perspective, and that's the company's what's the word I'm looking for? It's not their responsibility to look after your data. They merely give you the platform, right? So that's the kind of thing that we need to think about. You know, if we look at the report we released earlier in the year, kind of around when that privacy policy was going, you know, and rattling the news markets, we saw that most of the things that, you know, most of the big changes in the report that we generally do once a year was put down to compromised users based on bad behaviors by risky users. You know, we saw like north of 70% believe that employee behavior is putting the company at risk. We saw almost half of their companies, however, training them, you know, once a quarter or less than once a year. So I think, you know, to sum that question up, we've got this immense problem that everyone is very, you know, aware about in terms of the dangers of cybersecurity and how our users are impacting our company's risk. But on the flip side of that, we've got no companies or less than 15% of companies frequently training those users. So it's again a shift in that company-wide behavior, that believing that, you know, if training does help and I implement that in my business, I've got this tangible outcome, which is less likely for my users to click on dangerous links and a better behavior towards cybersecurity. So we've got to start driving that into our corporate and compliance initiatives to build the resilience against these cyber criminals.
Dwayne, you know, as you're talking, I'm just enjoying the fact that, and I am behind that point 110%, you know, because on the one hand, there is the responsibility that a platform has. But as users of a certain platform, we also need to be cognizant of the type of information that we put out there. And I think that's, you know, a piece of the equation that often, you know, gets, you know, left unsaid, because you always go after the big bad corporate. Yet, if you are the one who literally went and did the equivalent of putting your ID number and your name on a billboard next to the N1, you know, what can we really, you know, do and say about it? And from that point of view, then, from a business point of view, all right, where do you see the risks? Because I think you started alluding to it just now about the fact that, you know, employees are, you know, a big point of vulnerability. But I can think of the fact that, you know, if you're a business, at least let's, you know, look at it in the realm of business email, for example. There's emails that are flowing, let's say, from a business to employees. That's internal communication. But at the same time, you've got the external communication with suppliers, with customers, etc. So in that entire ecosystem, where is usually the point of vulnerability, the biggest one for businesses when it comes to cybersecurity?
I think if I could answer that question, I'd be a millionaire. So it depends on so many different factors, but the major ones are very kind of high level. The first is internal email traffic, right? So people trying to attack the Mudiwa, the Dwayne, etc. So it's that end user. I've seen his number on LinkedIn, and or his email address on LinkedIn, and I'm going to attack him. The second thing is far more, you know, more technical. So I've compromised Dwayne's password. I now want to use that password and see if I can access any work-related documents or work-related tools online. So they'll typically try and log into Office 365 or whatever it is that a company makes use of, and they'll run these automatically. So that's the kind of, you know, business email compromise, and then looking at the more hardcore attack vector, which is kind of looking at harvesting our credentials to enter in details. I want to just pause on something you mentioned, and, you know, the users are the weakest link and our users are the human firewall, our last line of defense. I've seen a lot of companies look at that in that perspective, but I've also seen a lot of companies say our users are our biggest assets. And it's a refreshing way to look at risk in a corporate. Because the users are effectively the biggest population of the business, right? And if you train them correctly with engaging content and get their views and share the insights with them, we're actually not as dangerous as we think we are. We just need to be given the right sets of information in a very consumable way. And you mentioned something earlier called information overload, which is something we've absolutely seen in the last 12 months, right? We've got people who've never worked at home before in their lives. We've now entrusted them to do so. But on the flip side of that, we've thrown terabytes of information on what to be careful of. And people are now sitting with this information overload of like, geez, I didn't understand cybersecurity before. Now I'm nowhere. I don't even understand all these acronyms and these principles and compliance frameworks and all these. So I think it's a relationship that needs to be very collaborative. You know, the IT team needs to figure out what it is that the users need and how the organization is going to succeed from it. But the users also need to feel a sense of responsibility, and that's to buy into an awareness training program and be part of that solution that helps a company remain safe. That will in turn help their behavior remain safe professionally, but of course, give them the tidbits that they need to keep their families and friends safe personally as well.
All right. Now, as we come to the end of the discussion, Dwayne, leading off of everything that we've just spoken about, the information overloads, I guess a shifting perspective to the users or customers being an asset as opposed to being viewed as the biggest point of vulnerability, all of these issues. And we understand that email compromise and ransomware attacks are two of the biggest things that businesses usually fall victim to. When it comes to email, you know, simply because this is where we find ourselves, you know, the context within which we find ourselves, from your work, just talking to businesses, corporates, etc., do you get the sense that from a business point of view, do they care? Because we've highlighted the information overload for us as ordinary people, but for, you know, businesses as a whole, do they care? Are they putting the measures in place, or is it more a tick box exercise of, if I don't have certain things, I might be seen as being, you know, contrary to Poppy or something?
You're speaking the language that I love, and absolutely, it's a difficult question to answer. I think companies really realize that they've got to do something. The data shows that it's 1 in 10 that are doing something. And I think a lot of companies, when they do something, they don't want to be all in to an awareness training program. They want to tick the box so that the auditors can say, or they can satisfy the auditor requirements that, hey, I've done some awareness training. But the fact is that an engaging program drives so much more than just a tick box exercise. It drives the right behaviors. It gets our company more resilient against cyber attacks. It shows in the data that we educate users and we engage them, and that they give us in return a safer lens to look at the dangerous emails that are coming in, or the way in which they leave assets unattended at an airline lounge. It's all showing that training them well gives us the results over and above just a compliance tick box. And that is such a fantastic way to look at it. I enable, I collaborate. At the end of the day, I've got a safer business because I've got a safer set of users. I mean, what a predictable outcome that any company would give their company up for, you know, and that's something that we're really trying to drive in the market, is give them what they require, engage them, collaborate with them. And at the end of the day, trust the process, and that you will be a more resilient and a safer business thanks to a safer set of engaged users.
So that's been us. We're talking to Dwayne Nickel, who is a cybersecurity expert at email specialist that is Mimecast, giving us some insight into the email business email landscape at the moment, but more importantly, what's actually going on, you know, with cybersecurity. We launched off talking about the current vaccination drive in South Africa, the fact that young people are excited, but the fact that people are excited and posting on social media is a potential risk, because people are putting up a lot of personal information with those vaccination cards, which could be used against them, particularly in the context of social engineering, where people can, you know, use details to start seeing, you know, your patterns online, who are you communicating with, and then using all of that to then impersonate people and get you to either pay money or, you know, compromise you in some type of ways. I like one of the big things that he said. I really like the analogy that he referenced to say, you know, you shouldn't put anything online that you wouldn't be comfortable, you know, putting on a billboard, you know, next to the highway. I'm really going to remember that, you know, going forward. So that's been it for this edition. Dwayne, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Madiwa, for having me.
This is Madiwa's Take.
quite a fascinating discussion with Dwayne around some of the threats that social media posting, you know, can have, you know, out there. And one of the things that I appreciated the most about the way that he explained things is giving us like a real world example how one thing can lead to another. Because when we are talking to security, cybersecurity experts, sometimes it's very easy to get bogged down with some of the very technical, you know, type of stuff. But just looking at it from, you know, a consumer point of view or ordinary point of view, that sort of puts, you know, the importance of some of these things, you know, into perspective. So I really hope that, you know, people were taking the advice that was being given into consideration, the fact that just be careful. That analogy about the billboard, really want to take to heart. But importantly is just the fact that there is this information overload, and you know, one just hopes that over time, you know, people, an awareness of cybersecurity just becomes, you know, more second nature, as opposed to something that people become apathetic about, because people do have the information on hand. People do know what's actually going on out there. You know, I can speak from a corporate point of view to say that we do get a lot of trainings. There's a lot of awareness, you know, that is happening out there. But even then, it's like that classic saying that, you know, you can lead the donkey to the water, but you can't necessarily make the donkey drink. And in the same way, you can expose people to information about how they should be safe online, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to always act on it. And, you know, maybe part of the solution is starting these things young. We are living in an increasingly digitalized world. Maybe having conversations around data security, data privacy, all of these things, because they all feed into this bigger pie at younger ages, because kids in school are using computers, they're using tablets, they're using Chromebooks, getting into some of those discussions around how they can protect themselves, but also at the same time then leading it on into the high school environment, tertiary, etc., just so that these things become a, you know, just one of those things like walking, breathing. We're all holding smartphones in our hands. It just becomes one of those things where people just know that they need to be safe in everything that they do. And then just lastly, just making concrete, you know, some of these things, because over the pandemic period, it's actually been found through some of the studies that South Africa is one of the most targeted countries when it comes to cybersecurity attacks. And it's simply because there is, you know, there's a general unawareness, you know, that is found in certain parts of the society. But at the same time, some of the social engineering and, you know, some of the sophisticated phishing attacks that Dwayne was speaking about are really that good. And especially at a time when people are working from home and accessing sensitive, you know, data about companies, you know, over unsecured networks. Yes, they're using VPNs, etc., but, you know, there's still, you know, all of those points of vulnerability. So awareness, that's probably the message to drive forward. Awareness is important. And then, you know, over time, hopefully, that can lead to better, you know, safety online being something that is second nature. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.